Barack Obama will arrive in Washington for the inauguration by train, and Joe Biden has been nicknamed Amtrak Joe thanks to his years of daily commutes to the Capitol. Is that a sign that the next 4 years will be more rail-friendly than in previous administrations? Well, with me now for today's Underreported is Thomas Downs, transportation expert and the former president of Amtrak. He was at Amtrak from 1993 to 1998. Welcome to our show.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Do you know what the current ridership figures are? How many Americans are taking trains these days?
I don't know the current closeout figure for last year, but I know that ridership overall for 2008 on Amtrak was up 14.5%.
Is that because of rising gas prices?
Rising gas prices and a frustration with air travel.
Mm-hmm. But I would assume that now that gas prices have gone down, people are back in their cars.
No, actually, ridership gains look like they're going to hold for this month at least and perhaps into the spring.
According to the American Public Transportation Association, mass transit ridership increased by more than 5% over the past year. And
which
people
is,
have been calling for this for years and years and years.
Well, maybe transit and intercity passenger rail's time has come again, perhaps for the first time in a generation.
Well, we always I know I've wondered when I've been in Europe and I have been on some of those high-speed trains in Spain, France, and Germany, which have gotten me to my destination as quickly and a lot more comfortably than if I'd flown. Why we haven't had something like that in this country?
Well, we're the only industrialized country in the world, China, without a commitment at the national level to high-speed passenger rail. China is in the process of building 5,000 miles of high-speed intercity passenger rail. Japan has been at it for 40 years. Almost all of Europe. It's hard to find an industrialized country that has not made significant investments in passenger rail. I think in America we've had kind of the notion that this is a mode of transportation whose time has come and gone, that it's kind of a Toonerville trolley kind of thing. And most presidents have allowed benign neglect to be their approach to Amtrak, at least on intercity passenger rail. Barack Obama seems to have been the first person since Richard Nixon to say the word Amtrak and to say it in a way that was positive. He's chosen to come to Washington, in part, I think, because of Lincoln's trip to Washington by Amtrak, and it's, I hope, more than just a visible recreation of Lincoln's trip.
Of course, Lincoln didn't come by Amtrak, but he did come by rail.
Well, Amtrak wasn't around until 1971.
That was because the railroads were having such a hard time going it alone as private entities.
Well, they said that if the national government did not relieve them of the common carrier responsibility for intercity passenger rail, that they would all collectively file bankruptcy.
And so, the federal government had to jump in.
At the time, they had the national government had little choice. They had no plans for what would come after intercity passenger rail. So they cobbled together Amtrak, and one of the guys, Paul Weyrich, who was part of the discussion at the time, said to me, they told President Nixon that he didn't have to worry that the railroad would probably be bankrupt in 5 years. It has suffered under that kind of, we don't necessarily need this, and it doesn't serve any real role in American transportation, but we have to kind of suffer with it. Barack Obama seems to be in a different place and says that it's part of energy, it's part of mobility, and it's an alternative to the kind of congested systems that we've got now.
Well, Congress, I often read that people in Congress say that they're tired of subsidizing Amtrak. But as I mentioned, Joe Biden has been called Amtrak Joe. Does he have a record of supporting Amtrak besides being a daily rider for so many years?
Oh, he's an incredibly active supporter of Amtrak. He helped the previous Amtrak reauthorization through the Senate. He helped the current Amtrak reauthorization through the Senate. He has been a supporter of the appropriations process, and he's been a very vociferous critic of management at times about what he perceives as shortcomings in the railroad, but he loves it. His son, Hunter Biden, is the vice chair of the Amtrak board right now.
Well, there are a lot of there's a lot of talk about jobs programs to revive the economy, but I think generally that means to most people building more highways, fixing up our bridges and tunnels. Can we really get serious about creating new railroads, or is it simply a matter of trying to improve Amtrak as it now is?
If there's enough money to do that.
If
Amtrak is allocated somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 billion to $1.5 billion worth of capital investment for rebuilding the railroad, including overhauling the locomotives and passenger cars and the trackage in the Northeast Corridor, I think that's a significant commitment that has not been there for maybe 30 years of presidential attention. I can't overestimate the power of the president using the bully pulpit to advocate, if he chooses, for this mode of transportation. It would get us past an era where disdain and neglect have been the rule. It would change the way the Congress perceives Amtrak and the way the Office of Management and Budget perceives Amtrak. Instead of trying to drive it out of existence or to piecemeal privatize it, to have a robust system like every other industrialized country in the world does.
Well, most people I know who've used Amtrak complain about delays, the train stopping for a while. What would it take to have bullet trains of the sort that you find in most European countries and in Japan?
You would guess that the electric catenary, the part of the power systems that drive those Acela trains on the corridor, was modern. Most of the catenary system on the Northeast Corridor was put in place in 1938. You can't run railroads with power systems and track and signal systems that have not been touched, in some cases, by human hands in 30 years. It simply is impossible to run an undercapitalized railroad to meet the expectations of the riding public. Well, you have to drive the trains at slow orders when the temperature is high, when signals are overwhelmed with power surges, you wind up on slow runs. People get very frustrated about it, even though they're loyal passengers. It has to be rebuilt.
Well, California voters just approved $9 billion for a high-speed rail link for all the cities between Sacramento and San Diego. So it's obvious that some Americans see rail as the future. Why can't that be done with Amtrak? And would we be able to fix the current system, or would we have to build a whole new group of train systems? We have to find new corridors.
Well, first, we have the best corridor in the country already electrified, Boston to Washington, with a dedicated Amtrak corridor. We should fix it so that you can run trains at 160 or 180 miles an hour, as these exact trains run in France at 185 miles an hour. Every day. They can't, because we have such a antiquated and unmodernized Northeast Corridor. If we could get past that, we could make investments as a nation, like California is making with high-speed rail, in areas like the Chicago region. The Chicago hub used to have higher-speed rail passenger service between Chicago and Detroit and Chicago and Indianapolis and Chicago and St. Louis and Chicago and Milwaukee, and running on a regular high-speed schedule. There's nothing that says we can't do that, and it would be cheaper than a third airport in Chicago.
Another place you might want to see a high-speed train is across Texas, going from Houston to Dallas to El Paso. That would save an awful lot of boring times driving across boring highways. Some people wonder why it's so expensive. In some cases, more expensive than flying.
On Amtrak, yes, in part because the economics of providing rail passenger service with an undercapitalized, if your capital fleet is in need of a lot of maintenance and overhaul, your operating costs are much higher than they should be. One of the things that capital does is reduce the operating expense, and ultimately that translates into a better competitive economic marketplace price.
My guest is Thomas Downs, who's a transportation expert. He was the president of Amtrak from 1993 to 1998. What was the state of Amtrak's health when you were its president? That was during the Clinton years, wasn't it?
It was. I remember at the Republican Revolution when Newt Gingrich and Bob Dole announced a new pact with America, and they said they were going to cut everything from A to Z, from Amtrak to zoological research. And it was a tough couple of years because there was not a Republican acceptance of the role that rail passenger service could play in the United States. One member of Congress told me that he thought Amtrak was at the last vestige of creeping socialism.
Well, that's because the trains were creeping so slowly.
Yes.
And did Bill Clinton use his role as president, the bully pulpit of the presidency, to try to affect any changes in attitudes about railroad travel?
No, neither did Jimmy Carter. Both were from southern states where they had a older view of a decaying rail passenger service in the South. And while Bill Clinton talked about making investments when push came to shove, he actually, his Office of Management and Budget for a number of years, cut the annual appropriation for Amtrak in half. So he talked a little bit about it, but in reality, in the end, he cut the railroad's operating funding significantly enough that it went into even deeper in debt, a debt service that it is still suffering under and needs to get out from underneath.
Have things changed at all over the past 8 years? This past October 16th, President Bush signed into law the first Amtrak five-year reauthorization bill since 2002.
Mm-hmm. And
does that show that people perhaps are changing their minds about Amtrak, or did that reauthorization bill do too little as far as you're concerned?
Well, it's never about the authorization bill. The authorization simply authorizes money to be spent and creates a framework for Amtrak. The proof is in what happens in the annual appropriations process. Does the money that is authorized actually appear? For the two authorizations that I've been through, the money just did not appear. and the way it was authorized in the legislation, it's kind of like the Jerry Maguire movie, show me the money. And it's not, it has not been there after an authorization.
Wait, so I'm trying to understand this. They authorize that Amtrak gets, let's say, $5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and you say, I need that $5 billion. And they just say, well, we're not going to give it to you?
My experience was that we were authorized at one point about $1.1 billion, and we got $600 million.
So you got half.
Yeah. So it didn't matter about the authorization. It meant it more about the budget politics of that year's budget.
What are trains used for these days in the United States? I know that passengers... passenger train use has gone down. Is it mostly freight these days?
The long distance national rail lines like Chicago to Seattle belong to the freight railroads. Those lines are owned totally by those private businesses. Every place, with the exception of the Northeast Corridor, which is owned by Amtrak. Amtrak operates over freight rail lines at the agreement of the freight railroads. And they actually operate and dispatch, or they dispatch the trains themselves, the Amtrak trains themselves. Amtrak doesn't own any of that trackage around the rest of the United States.
Mm-hmm. So in the old days, people used to go from New York to Chicago and then on to the West Coast, Los Angeles or Seattle or whatever, on trains, the way you can, but right now, I guess, across Canada. Can't do that anymore?
Well, you can. You can take the Capital Limited. You can take the the Empire Builder, you can take the Capital Limited from Washington to Chicago, and then the Empire Builder from Chicago to Portland and Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But
is that service any good?
Oh, some of those trains are the most gorgeous ways of traveling that you can imagine. Places that highways don't go. Scenery through the Rockies in Montana that will just knock your eyes out, and it the same way along the California coast. And the service is really good. There are a lot of really dedicated onboard people who love railroading and will bend over backwards to help you. It's not as timely as I would like because a lot of freight railroads simply park Amtrak trains when they get busy and leave 300 or 400 people sitting on a siding while they push through coal trains, for instance. And that's not how the law is written.
But that's where the money is for them?
That's where the money is.
Now, you mentioned earlier that on the Northeast Corridor in the trackage that Amtrak does own, that most of the electrification is 70 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So is the biggest hurdle to be overcome right now simply infrastructure repair?
Yes.
Should passengers be worried about safety with an infrastructure that old?
No, it's not about safety. No one would ever run an Amtrak train in an unsafe environment. I know that from my experience with the operating and the engineering folks. It is what that means about dependability and reliability. It's, can you depend on it 24/7? And the answer is, sometimes you can't. And that is, it risks at times selling a product that you can't 100% deliver all the time.
So you think that would turn around American attitudes toward rail if we simply knew that the system was reliable? We'd get on at the time that the train was supposed to depart and arrive at the time that we're told it's going to arrive at least 95% of the time. That would be better than the airlines, wouldn't it?
It would be, and it's more convenient because in a lot of cases, Amtrak delivers you to downtown,
mm-hmm.
not to an airport.
That's where you have to take a cab or a drive for 45 minutes or more in some cases.
Yeah, it's like flying into Kennedy. You may be in New York, but you're not in New York City. And Amtrak has that advantage about the directness of its service, but it also has the ability to just walk on the train and sit down and do work in a way that you find very difficult to do on an airline. I think that perception about rail passenger services is what has resulted in this large-scale, relatively large-scale for Amtrak, increase in ridership over the last 2 years. And I think part of it is energy prices, but I also think that in some ways the American public is getting anxiety-driven about air travel. Can you make it through the security line? Do I have the, you know, what if they take my deodorant, that kind of stuff? Take your shoes off.
None of that happens when you get on a train, at least
none
of the
trains. You just walk on a train.
And also the trains are a lot more energy efficient. But how much of an effort would it take to bring our rail infrastructure up to speed? How much real cost would it take? And do you think that in the current economic climate that anybody will take that all that seriously?
Well, if they're talking about the size of the countercyclical package that I hear and the infrastructure component of it at several hundred billion dollars, potentially. If you think about $1.5 billion of that and what that could do about curing a number of problems with intercity passenger rail, overhauling every locomotive in the fleet, overhauling most of the rail cars, and believe it or not, the Acelas are 8-9 years old now and are at the point where they begin to need some major overhaul work. So if a railroad can operate with a decent level of capital, it's got a lower operating cost long term, it's more efficient, and it's more effective as a partner in an integrated national transportation system.
Our system is totally the opposite of the British, which used to be national and then was privatized. People in England complained that things got a lot worse after privatization. In this country, they complained that things got a lot worse after nationalization. I guess there's no real answer, is there?
Well, the French and the Germans and the Japanese made a concerted effort. They thought of railroads not as they used to be. They thought of them as high-speed rail, higher and highest speed rail, and began to build plant and infrastructure around that in a way that made it part of a national set of aviation, highway, and intercity passenger rail methods and modes of moving the American public. But we haven't done that.
Neither has England. In fact, if you've ever taken the Channel train, you dawdle until you get into the Channel, and then from then on to Paris, you fly practically. Well, let's hope that we can start doing that in this country. Maybe things will change in the near future, because I like to get on the trains. Thomas Downs is the former president of Amtrak. He was there from 1993 to 1998. And I want to thank you so much for being with us on today's Underreported.
My pleasure. Thank you.